I can't begin to tell you. The movie wasn't all depressing, though. Wonderful information and wonderful the folks that such a spirit of courage, and the speech, the things they were saying regarding a spirit of community and what it meant to them to have a club that they could go to. I mean, you know, people go, oh, well, everybody just goes to bars. Why don't you people do anything else? Well, hell, you can't get in the churches and places like that. you know, you certainly can't be yourself at the shopping mall, at the Winn-Dixie or the Piggly Wiggly. You have to do that behind closed doors in the rural South, I'm here to tell you. None of this open stuff. Anyway, the movie is amazing. I highly recommend that you see this documentary. It's the winner of many awards, Sundance Awards, several categories. I'm sorry, I don't have the site in front of me. You can see that on the site. But again, that's smalltowngaybar.com. That track, Homo Rainbow, as well as many other tracks are in it. But it's not a movie about music. It's a movie about their experiences. And in this movie, they talk about someone that we talked about a few weeks ago. I don't know if you noticed, when I was telling that segment, I had to pause for a moment because tears were welling up. It was a very disturbing segment for me to do. And it was about the young man who was tied up in his mobile home. And they knew this fellow. He's from that area. He was tied up in his mobile home and tortured for a period of 2 hours. He was burned with cigarettes. His head was partly slice off of his body. This all took place over a two-hour period. Lots of physical body trauma. His body was then taken outside and burned. And the man who did this thought he was doing the right because he went to the police department and told them he did it. I just killed a queer. That son of a bitch came on to me. As if he were going to get an award or something. And very disturbing to talk about this. His mother, this man's mother, is in this small town gay bar, and she talks about her son, and it's all very disturbing. I strongly recommend that you see Small Town Gay Bar. I know it's available on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's available at the sure as hell not available at the Winn-Dixie in Mississippi. I'm not sure if it's available at Blockbuster, but it very likely is because it won so many Sundance Awards. I just wanted to tell you about that. And thank you, Preston, in Denver, for telling us about that movie. I have seen it, and it is remarkable. And I love that track, Homo Rainbow. I just love it. I'm going to slip that in anywhere I get a chance to slip it in. Amazing track. And I just love this chat room. People are so up on the news. You know, when I do news, they're not listening to it for news. They're listening to it to see if I get it right. Because they already know. Oh, when you do an evening show, these people, they already know what's going on. Love these people. And I love all you guys. I want to tell you about what's going on in Manchester, Kentucky. A fellow named John Becknell. Now, he walks into the courtroom, and he sits down at his standard spot, and it's in the front row, just behind the prosecutor's table. Now, Becknell is a devout Christian, and he's known Brother Jim. You know, these days we always have to put the word Christian in quotation marks because nobody knows what the hell the word means anymore. Whether it means, you know, you're a freaking, you know, son of Satan and you're out there trying to control the world and make sure everybody follows the rule of law. Accusing, but you know in the Bible, like Satan is referred to as the accuser. That's one of his names in the Bible. And that's what these people do, the ones that we have to quote Christian their names. It's what they constantly do. They accuse people of homosexuality and divorce. Oh, Jesus. Oh, it's all so damn petty. It makes my head spin. But anyway, enough of that. But anyway, Brother John sits down there and he pulls his pen and pencil out and has got himself a printout of the docket. And he sits there for the full 3 hours in the courtroom. And he takes notes, you see, on the judge's actions. Everything the judges do, he takes notes on the attendance of which police officers are there, and he takes notes of who's a repeat offender, and he makes notes of who's a first-time offender, and he makes notes about what the judges sentenced them to. He makes very careful note about all of these things, this Christian man. And why does he do this, you ask? In order to make sure they are treated fairly? In order so that they can go to the prisons and jails and bring them Bibles? Oh, no. It's to make sure drug offenders in eastern Kentucky are getting what they deserve. Yes, that's right. It's a new outreach from the church. It's called Burn in Hell, You Freaking Drug Users. See, they've become frustrated with widespread drug use. Here we find out it's especially about easily accessible prescription painkillers. Now, you know, it's funny that they're going at folks in eastern Kentucky. I mean, why not go after the preacher that was busted the other day in a dress with his skirt hiked up over his head at the car wash with an empty bottle of OxyContin under the seat and a bottle of vodka next to him? Oh, that's not mentioned. Now, just the poor people in eastern Kentucky. How about Rush Limbaugh with the fact that he just about went deaf sucking down those narcotics? Oh, no, it's just the folks around here. See, them people, they can afford their habit. But you see, now the junkies around here, they ain't got that much money, so they're stealing from us. So we're going to make sure they get locked up. We're not trying to find out to bring them a Bible. Oh, no. 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 Oh, Jesus. So they're moving away from their role as a refuge for the poor. Or no, none of that stuff anymore. No support for the addicted. They're just interested in law enforcement. Now, the Community Church of Manchester is leading the way in this court watch. It's got a little name. They've named it Court Watch. And various volunteers attend the court hearings to monitor the judges and oversee drug-related cases. Lord have mercy. This guy Becknell, the one that sits behind the prosecutor, he runs the church's local Christian television station, too. And he's concerned that a lot of churches shun getting involved in politics or going to court. The Reverend Doug Abner, who's the pastor there at the community church. Now, by the way, that church's slogan for the 2004 anti-drug march, yes, they had a march, honey. Not gay pride, it was anti-drugs. Their drug march was titled Get Saved or Get Busted. And they say that the court watchers put mild, it's a quote, mild pressure on judges to do the right thing. Lord have mercy. What that means is they're compiling a list of judges who lock people up forever versus the judges that give out probation or perhaps being the offender being sent to a drug rehab facility, and not necessarily at the expense of the state. Sometimes these folks are sentenced to drug rehab facilities if they can afford it, you know, that they pay for. Sometimes it's at the expense of the state. Other times it's probation. It all varies. But you're not supposed to do that, or you'll end up on the church's list. Well, no, judges are many times elected. And come election time, you're not a judge anymore unless you beat the hell out of these drug-addicted people. Now, the program is concerning some people of faith, and they say it goes against Christian values. Well, duh. Now, these are the real Christians, the ones that we don't have to, quote, mark around when we say it. They're saying some of the churches. Reverend John Ross, he's the director, by the way. Way to go, Catholics. He's the director of the Catholic Committee on Appalachia. He's saying that churches have traditionally been the humanitarian influence in this society, and churches should focus on drug counseling and ministering to inmates. And he cites the Gospel of Matthew 25:36. Concerning the final judgment. And Matthew 25:36 contains the verse, when I was in prison, you came to see me. And it also goes on, when I was hungry, you fed me. And the other examples. But no more. The church has got a new punishment ministry. That's what we got, punishment ministry. Now, this community church is 95 miles south of Lexington. And there's some discussion about separation of church and state, but there's no reason, he says, why congregants should stay away from the criminal justice system. And he says there's no reason why churches and courts can't work together to combat drug offenders. Work together, meaning we don't elect you unless you beat the hell out of them. And the church says we are a major part of mountain life. Why shut us out of this institution? Because, you sons of bitches, you're supposed to be in ministry. That's why you're... Lord have mercy. Oh, Lord. He says good people are sitting back and doing nothing about drug use, and we're standing up and we're making sure that the courts are going to combat it, and we have an influence in this community. And Lord have mercy. Well, enough about that. Nasty little story there. Plenty more where that came from. Don't worry. Don't worry, my honeys. There's plenty more nasty stories where that came from. I specialize in them. That's about all I've got to tell you. There is something encouraging, though. Let's see. Where is that one? I'll get to it. Maybe a page or two down. Here we go. This is something good. Someone made me aware of this today, and I thank them for it. I don't often get to do good news, but it's actually good news regarding a transsexual. Male sports writer returns to work as a woman. Now, this goes back to April 26th. Mike Penner is the name. Wrote what he thought was going to be the toughest article in his career. He wrote, "I'm a transsexual sports writer, and it's taken me more than 40 years and a million tears and hundreds of hours of soul searching and therapy for me to work up courage to type these words." And the piece ran in the sports section next to his regular column. And the interest was astounding. The LA Times says that by mid-evening, the story was one of the most heavily viewed stories in the LATimes.com site in the last year, with about 500 million page views. There was a massive response to the story, not only to the website, but also across the entire media speak spectrum, including people who actually write on paper, whatever that is. And anyway, he returned to work as Christine Michelle Daniels. And so far, that's right, smooth sailing. His very public trans has put spotlight on that culture, on the culture of culture may be the wrong word, but on that situation. And, the fact that he's changing, and he has changed into a she, and it is now complete, and that he has done it publicly, and he has done it, she has done it, in the sports world, is truly amazing. The concept was to come out publicly, and so they let her actually write the stories and to introduce it as a topic, because that way she would have more control over it. And the people who read her columns are mostly just like, well, yeah, okay, so that's cool. Now, what's going to happen with their favorite team next week? The sports blogs are expressing almost uniform admiration for the courage. And overall, the people who read these sports blogs are just, mildly bemused, like, yeah, no problem. Now what's up, with the Angels? Get back to your job. and this is as it should be. This is the world as it should be. It's always so surprising to read where something doesn't turn into a murder or someone trying to take away their insurance rights or their insurance benefits for their employer. It's always amazing to me when something actually works out along these lines. Her bravery. It's really something special. She revealed it to her supervisor, who is a sports editor, Randy Harvey, that she was transitioning, and he said, "Well, you go ahead and write the piece. We want you to go ahead and handle this." And see, in the majority of states, being fired would have been a very distinct probability. If you recall, well, maybe you don't recall, I'm not sure if I covered this very deeply because it occurred before Strictly Confidential began airing, but in February, the city of Largo, Florida, fired its city manager of 14 years after he revealed that he was going to undergo sex reassignment surgery. And oh, did they scream and yell, and oh, did they... Suddenly this commended man who had risen to a high level in government, the city manager, by the way, he was well paid and had raises and constantly had good reviews, was well loved by the citizens, and on and on and on and on. Oh, all suddenly he was awful. Oh, all of a sudden he was terrible. All of a sudden he was picking on his employees. All of a sudden he had mood problems at work and couldn't get along. You know, same old story. And that's because Largo, Florida doesn't have any control. You can fire anybody for doing something like as basic to their own psyche as reassigning their sex, their gender. California, though, is one of eight states, along with Illinois and Maine and Minnesota and New Jersey and New Mexico and Rhode Island and Hawaii, as well as Washington, D.C., that have passed laws that prohibit discrimination based on gender identity. Now, coming along, Oregon is going to join that list on January the 1st, 2008, and the legislatures of Vermont and Iowa and Co. have passed bills that are awaiting their government's signature. So this is... See, I told you I could find some good news. I didn't find it all by myself. Someone sent me this. I could always find the bad news, though. But anyway, Daniels is the... apparently not the first sport transsexual to emerge from the sports world. Back in 2003, there was a fellow, Chris Carl. He was a sports writer, and he was a columnist. He had something called Baseball Prospectus, which was at the time the gold standard for baseball analysis. And came Christina. And at the time, he wrote that nobody batted an eye. It was ultimately like no big deal. Now this is just very interesting. This is coming from the sports reporting, from sports news, folks. Now, if you're talking about the players themselves, now transsexuals as players, oh no, they don't have those kind of benefits. No, they get that's a whole different thing. You know, it's remember it was a big deal just to have a lesbian tennis player. A transsexual in sports would just be amazing. And there's lots of information about various states and which states prohibit you from changing your sex in the birth certificate. Apparently, Idaho, Ohio, and Tennessee still prohibit you from changing your sex on the birth certificate, even if you've had the complete surgery and the series of hormones and all the things that takes. I don't know all the things it takes. We'll have some more transsexual guests on the show from time to time, because I'm pretty ignorant about it, but we sure learned a lot from the woman that we did have in the show. By the way, Thailand has become a haven, transsexual or trans or sex reassignment surgery, SRS, it's called, sex reassignment surgery. And also there's a small town in, don't tell, focus on the family, there's a small town in Trinidad, Colorado. Oh, Jesus, I shouldn't be saying this in the air. No, Focus on the Family must not have found out about them, but it's known as the gender reassignment capital of the United States, and I'm not sure all the details why, but there must be, it must be friendly to that sort of thing. And Trinidad, Colorado, never heard of it, not sure where it is. But we are near Focus on the Family. Yes, I hope they are nowhere near there. So, as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free at 877. Oh, wait. I am so sorry. Do I still have caller Jim on the line? I'm so forgetful. Do I still have caller Jim? Jim, are you with us?
You do?
Jim, I'm so sorry, sweetheart. I was just going to do that one little bit about, I've forgotten how, what you see the state I'm in, and I was going to tell him something, just went to something else, and I forgot. Jim, I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Good evening, Mr. America, and all the kids. Let's go to Fred.
How are you this evening?
Reasonably well. And yourself?
I've got a little bit of a sniffle, and I'm trying to remember to turn the mic off when I go sniffle, but I don't always remember to do it. I so need an assistant. I really do. Doggy means well, but she's not good with switches.
Well, my regards to your canine friend. Just a few comments, if I may, please, sir.
Yes, sir.
You know, as far as this thing in the Colosseum in Rome, you mean the
yes,
Carpentieri don't have anything better else to do? My God, the last time I was in Rome, I remember at the Colosseum as being the scene of the Campfire Girls. You ever heard of those groups?
Well, no, I haven't, but I have been reading that kissing in Rome is like, you know, as common as pasta, that, you know, straights kiss, and it's just like, that's the norm. And so, what is this Gestapo just, it was apparently a whole attack force that came down on these guys.
Just say pop. But, you know, I can remember, Lord, that's where the ladies of Easy Virtue would hang out in the Colosseum. And when it was cold, I mean, they would actually build little fires to keep them warm.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, it is. I've seen those fires burning. Thank God they weren't the ones that Diocletian and some of the Julio-Claudian emperors would light, or Nero, you know. But anyway, I guess they've come a long way since then, right, Peter?
I guess so. It just seems so out of character for a place like Rome. You'd expect the capital of the whole European thing of.
Really.
But maybe they were too close to Vatican City. Maybe the Pope saw them out the window. Maybe that's it.
Oh, I don't want to even go there. But anyway, I'll tell you, you were talking about this film called The Small Town Gay Bar earlier.
Yes, it's called Small Town Gay Bar. Amazing movie.
Now, there's a documentary out. It's about a bar at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the home of the 82nd Airborne. And it's an alternative bar, which is, you know, quite popular among everybody there. And, you know, the documentary emphasized the patriotism of these people, since it is the headquarters of the JFK Special Warfare Center and also the 82nd Airborne. And it was a very interesting thing. And there's another movie out called Soldier Girl. And this one is in, I think, Fort Knox, Kentucky. And it's a true story about this soldier who falls in love with a transgender person and who is subsequently killed by one of his fellow soldiers. And it's,
It seems like I came up, when we had when we had Shara Greer from Service Members Legal Defense Network, it seems like I came across that story again. That's familiar. Somehow or another, I associated with that. He started visiting a little gay club up there, didn't he? And he met her?
He did, and eventually wound up on the 4th of July, or the day after, being bludgeoned to death with a baseball bat.
I remember that now. And he was in some sort of a... He was in some sort of a barracks, I think.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, there you are. Fort Bragg and Fort Knox. So, what can I say?
No, that's a shame. I had forgotten about. You know, I remember people like Matt Levitch but there was the fellow too who was. I remember it happened in Japan. He was beaten to death. There was something that happened in Japan. He was beaten to death in a men's room or something. That his military people followed him around and killed him. Do you remember that story? I wish I knew more details on that.
It was very, very bad. And just today I saw a documentary, or not a documentary, I think it had Glenn Close, the story of Marguerite Kannenmeyer, the colonel of the National Guard. And it was very good. But anyway, these things abound. But tonight it's the Joan Crawford Festival on TCM, so I can't wait to see Joan put on her shoulder pads and go to it in berserk.
Yes, Joan gives us all hope, doesn't she?
So we're going to transition from Tallulah to Joan Crawford. How's that?
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Now, that is a true trans. That's a true trans story. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. But that, yeah, yeah. That's
well,
good.
Tallulah
that's
Joan
very
Crawford was the best friend. You know, Joan that's Crawford just can't choose. A shop girl from Texas. Her real name was Lucille LeSueur. And they actually had a contest at MGM to give her the name of Joan Crawford. They had to rename Lucille LeSueur to be Joan Crawford.
You know, that's interesting. It seems I must have read that because that name is so unusual. It sounds very familiar. You don't hear that every day. Must have read that somewhere when I was a small homosexual sitting on my daddy's knee.
Okay. Well, listen, I hope you're going to be feeling better and the weather is going to treat you better. And, you know,
okay.
Just want to say my hat's off to one of the hardest working people in show business tonight. That's you. So I will give that supreme accolade to you because I know you work very hard to do what you do and get what you trying to get across to people. I certainly appreciate it.
Well, I love you, Jim, and thank you so much for giving us a call this evening.
And thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Good evening to you. You know, I have had a track here I was going to been meaning to use this for almost a week. This is what happens. I send tracks to the studio, and I'll say, tonight, this is the lesbian track of the night, or tonight, this is the track of interest, or this is the dance track, and then we just march right by it. We don't play it. Because of all the other things we do. But tonight I'm not going to miss it. This was sent in by one of our listeners, and it's an absolutely beautiful song. Now, I feel like probably Bob and Agnes are probably going to use at least some of this on their show, too. Their show. Yeah, it's definitely their show. Bob is nothing without her, let me tell you. Anyway... this is a track by Holly Near, and it was sent by one of our dear listeners, and I absolutely love this song. It's our lesbian track of the night. It's by Holly Near, and it's called Mountain Song, Kentucky Woman.
I have dreamed on this mountain since first I was my mother's daughter, and you can't just take my dreams away. Now with me watching, you may drive a big machine, but I was born a great big woman, and you can't just take my dreams away without me fighting. It's so mountain raised my many daughters. Some died young, some are still living. If you come here for the taking a mountain, well, we ain't come here to give it. I have dreamed on this mountain since first I was my mother's daughter, and you can't just take my dreams away. Now with me watching, no, you can't just take my dreams away without me fighting. No, you can't just take my dreams away. Kentucky woman, Appalachian dream. Machine to you. on this mountain since first I was my mother's daughter, and you can't just take my dreams away. Now let me watch it. No, you can't just take my dreams away without me fighting. No, you can't just take my dreams away.
Wow. Absolutely wow. That is an amazing track, and that is by Holly Near. In fact, the entire CD has some amazing music on it. I have a little wire problem here. I'll fix that in a moment. It's making a little bit of noise against the headset. Not a problem. We shall be very careful with it for the time being. Thank you so much for sending that track in. And just amazing. That voice could slay you. Just amazing. Speaking of Singapore, which we weren't, on Friday, they banned a gay rights forum in which a Canadian law professor was going to speak. It's the second time in a week that the city has forbidden an event. forbidden love. This is now's the time to play forbidden love, but that's the DJ thing. It's a whole different subject. In any case, it's the second time in a week they have forbidden an event that dares speak of a gay issue. If you'll recall, they just recently banned the... remember I was talking about it the other night. There was an exhibition of photographs. There were 80 photographs, and the photographs were of gay men and lesbians kissing. Now, people were all fully clothed. They were just kissing, and it was part of supposed to be a gay pride event. But in Singapore, they said that it's images like these that promote homosexual lifestyle, and it cannot be allowed. Oh, that lifestyle. Mm-mm-mm. In Singapore, they say that our laws are an expression and a reflection of the values of our society. Your values, maybe. Oh, that's right. We're not part of society. I remember now. And they are saying that the discourse over domestic issues, such as laws that govern homosexuality, in Singapore must be reserved by Singaporeans. In other words, they're objecting to this Canadian law professor who is coming to speak. And Singaporeans is your word of the day. See if you can fit that into a sentence tomorrow. In any case, they are saying that foreigners should refrain from interfering with our laws. And this all comes amid city and state debates of whether gays should be decriminalized. You understand that you could still go to prison there if you're caught in the privacy of your own home, whispering in another man's ear, or whatever they do in bed. I'm sure I don't know. And let's have a look here. Oh, yes, and in the Gloria Gaynor department, we've got a male version of Gloria Gaynor. Remember we did the story on Gloria Gaynor? Made all of her money in the gay community with all those wonderful songs, Honey Bee, and there's a whole long list of them. Well, we've got one of the village people is the cop, so it's no great loss. He never blew my skirt up anyway. But one of the village people is now melting down and having a real big hissy fit. He was the front man for the village people. He was the cop, and he's written a tell-all book detailing his frustration with the flamboyant gay bandmates and how they ultimately caused him to give up the group. Yes, he's trying to make a comeback, you see, and now he is saying that that YMCA was never meant to refer to gay cruising, and he is trying to say that it was never intended to be an innuendo and that many of the homosexual fans read it into the song. Oh, boy, he's really distancing himself. We're homosexuals now. We're not gay folks where he made his money. Do you know that a man still receives almost $1 million in royalties from the songs that they did? You know, they're still played. Here it is. Here's the reference. He still claimed he still receives nearly $1 million a year in royalties. Amazing. Y'all didn't know that they were playing Macho Man that often, did you? Somebody is. I wish I had it uploaded to the studio. Of course, there was in the Navy. There was YMCA. I have a wonderful remix of YMCA, but that's beside the point. He said that the YMCA song, they're talking about having fun. with the fellas. Not, they don't mean the boys, they mean the fellas. And he goes on and on to this, anything that has to do with homosexuality and how everybody just misunderstood the Village People. So there you go. The Village People have now joined Gloria Gaynor in the I Never Touched the Bitch stack of stories. And it's the top of the hour. It's the 10 o'clock top of the hour, and we'll head on to the news and come back with our guest. And this is Peter Godbold, Strictly Confidential.
Off the ground, I said, young man, 'cause you're in a new town, there's no need to be unhappy, young man, there's a place you can go, I said, young man, when you're short on your dough, you can stay there, and I'm sure you will find me.
This is the Quality News Network. The House has passed a bill authorizing up to $250 million in federal funding to reconstruct the interstate bridge in Minneapolis that collapsed earlier this week. The Senate is expected to pass a similar measure. Legislation was needed to bypass a $100 million mandated cap on federal emergency spending. Authorities in Minneapolis discovered a fifth body under the twisted wreckage of the collapsed 35 West Bridge today. As many as 8 people are reported still missing. At least 100 were injured. First Lady Laura Bush visited the disaster scene today. President Bush visits the site tomorrow. Minnesota officials may have known as early as 1990 that the bridge was structurally deficient. Experts have rated an estimated 12% of the nation's bridges, that's more than 75,000, as structurally deficient. Current repair costs are estimated at $188 billion and could take decades to complete. A U.S.-led global warming summit will be held late next month in Washington, D.C., seeking agreement on greenhouse gas levels worldwide. President Bush invited European Union members, as well as the United Nations and 11 other countries. This weekend, President Bush meets with Afghan President Hamid Karzai at Camp David. They're expected to discuss the South Korean hostages still being held by the Taliban. House Republicans left the floor today in protest of Democrats' failure to vote for legislation denying welfare benefits to illegal immigrants. August recess begins tonight, and House members have been trying to pass several pieces of legislation before leaving for several weeks' time. The House overwhelmingly approved a bill allowing the import of cheaper prescription drugs from Canada, Australia, and elsewhere. All imported medicines must be FDA approved. In London, a suspect who was badly burned in a botched car bombing attempt at Glasgow Airport last month has died of his wounds. He was never questioned or charged in the incident. Leaders from Darfur's broken rebel movement have begun talks in Tanzania. Mediated by the United Nations and the African Union, the talks could lead to peace negotiations with the Khartoum government in the coming weeks. We'll take a look at science and business news that's just ahead, but first this message from QNN.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address and city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
The FDA is warning consumers not to eat certain brands of French-cut green beans because of concern they may be tainted with the toxin that causes botulism. The green beans were manufactured by Lakeside Foods of Wisconsin and packed in 14.5-ounce cans. Cattle being raised at a farm in Surrey, England, have been infected with foot and mouth disease. British authorities have placed a ban on all movement of livestock in that country. A 3-mile perimeter has been put in place around the farm. NASA announced the Space Shuttle Endeavour's launch will be delayed by a day. Engineers are working on fixing a leak in the crew cabin. The shuttle now expected to take off next Wednesday evening. Labor Department reporting last month's unemployment rate rose to 4.6%. That's a 6-month high. Ford Motor announced the recall of more than 3.5 million vehicles because of concerns over a cruise control switch that may cause fires. More than a dozen types of cars, trucks, and SUVs from last 15 model years are recovered by that recall. Light sweet crude oil trading at $75.85 a barrel. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 281 points, landing at 13,181. The NASDAQ down 65 points at 2511. The S&P 500 down 39 points at 1433. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And welcome back to the second hour of Strictly Confidential. I am your host, Godbold, and I am glad to be with you and to have you with me on this Friday evening. And we will be joining our guest, Jeff Anderson, in just a moment. Jeff is running for city council seat in Duluth, Minnesota. As I said earlier, the Republicans beat us up daily. The Democrats never say a word unless directly questioned, and then it's always some sort of mumble-jumbled legislative doublespeak in middle-of-the-road sort of, but not quite, you know, sort of one foot in and one foot out. At least that's what we've come to expect. In other words, if we're going to get anything done, we're going to need to do it ourselves. This is what we're going to be interviewing GLBT candidates across the country. If you recall, we had Kevin Beckner with us the other evening, who's running for Hillsborough County District 6. Jeff Anderson is running for a city council seat, as I said, in Duluth, Minnesota. Now, Jeff got his start, or his first job, Let's start over here. Jeff got his first job at the age of 10 years old, and as best I can tell, the man has not stopped since then. He has been a member and past chairperson of the Duluth County Development Committee, vice president of the Duluth Housing Commission, a member of the Duluth Charter Commission he's currently a member of, or has served as a member of, the board of directors of the Second Northern Lakes Food Bank. And by the way, I've seen pictures on his website. Not only is he serving as the board of directors, he actually is in the kitchen with bowls and stirring and dealing with. He's a hands-on kind of guy. He is the Duluth Legacy Endowment Fund, the Duluth Playhouse. The list goes on and on. I don't know where to begin to tell you about this fellow. He is veteran of the Minnesota Army National Guard. He has been in radio and television for a number of years. The man has actually interviewed Charles Kuralt. He's interviewed Mike Wallace. And, in fact, he's even worked for Charles Kuralt after Kuralt bought WELY. And I have to jokingly, I know that Jeff is online, so he's hearing this, so I'm not saying anything behind his back. I didn't realize he had such a long list of credits in the broadcast industry, or I might have a second thought about it. But in any case, Jeff, you are so welcome to the show. Welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you with us, and I'm so glad you could join us tonight. Jeff, according to what I'm seeing here, you would be the first openly gay elected in Duluth, should you win. And also, from what I'm seeing here, you have a darn good chance of doing just that, because you have the endorsement of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. Can you tell us about your history and about the endorsement and about all the things that are going on? We are all very interested in what you're doing and mighty damn proud of you, I might add.
Well, thank you very much. It's the campaign is going very well, and I was very pleased to be able to get the endorsement of the DFL party. In Minnesota, we do it different. We're not just Democrats here. We're Democratic Farmer Labor Party members. So having that in a community like Duluth in northeastern Minnesota really helps out with an organization. And I've just been very active in the community for many years now, and am pleased to be able to I guess, step forward and seek elected office. And I hope that, you know, we can continue to do great things in Duluth. Duluth's a wonderful, very progressive community. And I was surprised to find out that I would be the first openly gay elected official in Duluth. I never really gave it a second thought. I guess I had assumed there might have been someone in that position previously, but I guess we're opening up new doors for people in Duluth, and I'm proud to be able to do that.
Apparently so. And in going through the information on your site, that the fact that you're an openly gay, or will be the an openly gay elected official is really the very least of your concerns. You seem to be genuinely concerned about the community, as it shows with your work with the harvest, the food bank, and your other activities. Tell what's going on in Duluth, and from a political point of view, specifically the gay community there. Are there issues that you're trying to help with them, or is it more of a community-wide thing?
Well, when I decided to run, and really with all of my activities in the community, I've always done it as a concerned citizen who really loves this community. I moved here from a city I grew up in, which has a population of about 4,000, in about 7 miles away from the Canadian border. And I grew up there, moved to Duluth to go to college at the University of Minnesota Duluth when I was 18, and have been here ever since. And I always joke that I grew up and wanted to move to the big city, and here I am, even though Duluth itself is only 86,000 people, not terribly big. But everything I've always done has been focused on the community and how we can work together and help people, not just people per se from the GLBT community, but people from every different part of our community. And so doing this, I've done all of these things, and I happen to be gay. So that's what's been you know, refreshing about this campaign, is that the fact that I'm gay hasn't really come up as an issue, because we're focused on doing all of these other things. The reason I'm running isn't because I want to be the first openly gay person to serve in public office in Duluth. It's because we have great things that we can do for every sector of our community. But speaking specifically about GLBT persons in Duluth, we've come a long way in just the last several years. I think the Duluth this year will be celebrating its 21st Pride Festival, 21st annual Pride Festival over the Labor Day weekend. And it's really become, actually last year, I believe, it was voted Best Small Town Pride in America by Out Magazine. It's become more accepted by the community. It's become a welcoming event. It's really been embraced over the last few years. Whereas I can remember being 18 or 19 years old and reading the newspaper and seeing letters to the editor that would say how this was a horrible thing and we shouldn't be doing this. And that attitude has really changed in the last few years, which I think says a lot for the community. We are a very progressive community, and there are certainly challenges in the area of GLBT rights, but I think we've made great headway in Duluth and in Minnesota.
Well, I have to tell you, Jeff, this is incredibly good news, and it also echoes what Kevin was telling us from his race in South Florida. he's just not, and apparently you're not either, getting any kind of guff or any sort of attacks against your campaign or you personally or against your plans or claiming you have a hidden agenda simply because you happen to be a gay man. This is an experience that Kevin is having also. You know, from our perspective here, you know, we're constantly covering things like the latest release from the American Family Association or Focus on the Family with the distortions and the half-truths and complete outright fallacies that are distributed throughout, their mailing lists and forward this to the next person and murders that are happening around the country. So we are thrilled to hear this, and we're a little dumbfounded, too, that we just don't know how to answer, because I want to say to you, but Jeff, aren't your tires slashed in the morning? But Jeff, don't they throw you when you drive down the street? This is just amazing news for me personally, and I think for the listener.
Yeah, it's something that, preparing to run for office, I expected there might be some negativity associated with this, and one of the more conservative anonymous blogs in our community has mentioned it, but nobody has taken a step past that where they have attacked me in any way for it. And I don't know if that's going to happen, and I certainly hope it doesn't, because I think we have big enough problems, not just in Duluth, but in the state of Minnesota and in this country, to worry about rather than whether somebody's gay or straight or black or white or what have you. And I hope that our politics here, I'm an optimist, so I hope that maybe we've moved past that. I wouldn't be surprised if between now and the primary in September and the general election in November, if something was to happen. But I even had a discussion with a newspaper reporter here in Duluth who said, you know, we understand there's been some people who blogged about the fact that you're gay, but we really don't even deem it to be incredibly newsworthy right now, unless you're attacked in some negative way. They said, clearly it's not the reason you're running. It's not that you have this particular agenda and you're running for public office. It just happens to be that just like somebody might happen to be married with three children, you happen to be an openly gay male. And that, to me, is refreshing. This, considering a political climate just 5 years ago in Duluth, where we had a mayor who would not sign a proclamation for the Gay Pride Festival in this community. Over the last 4 years, we've had a mayor and administration that's been very open, very welcoming. We have a chamber of commerce that's been welcoming to our Pride Festival and to people who come from out of town to enjoy such a thing. And we live just 2.5 hours north of Minneapolis-St. Paul, which has one of the largest GLBT communities in the country, I think third or fourth largest. So we're a community that, both with our colleges and universities, as well as our tourist population, has a large number of gay men and women who come here and who are welcomed. And I've pointed out in this campaign that I think that's not just important to just who we are, but it's also an important factor in economic development. There's a professor named Richard Florida who's written a number of books on this topic. There's certain factors that help with economic development in communities, and being a welcoming and open community is something that is important for people who want to start a business or for companies or industry that want to move to a community, because a community where two men or two women can walk down the street and hold hands is a community where, say, a computer geek or I'm using names being stereotypical, but people who might not be, you know, your quote-unquote norm, those people will fit in and feel welcome and be welcomed.
Very good point. And I, too, have seen some information along those lines that communities that are welcoming of GLBT folks tend to attract more arts people there who are music. There's more music. There's more cultural, venues. And these are important to people who are considering moving to any given area. Is there anything to do but go to McDonald's? Is there anything to do but sit home and watch television? Well, these things happen in progressive communities, and I think people are beginning to catch on to that. Not the least of which is that for so long, 8 years now, it's been this sleight of hand thing. It's like, look, see, it's the homosexuals. Look over there, look, see, it's brown people sneaking over the border that's ruining your lives. Where, in reality, what's going on is the country is being decimated by the current administration, without mincing any words. And it seems to me that people are maybe starting to catch on to that. If so, this is great news. People are actually starting to look at the issues and no longer are being distracted by all of that noise. I'm hearing you say that.
Yeah, I think people right now are hungry for vision and for leadership on every level of government, local, state, and certainly national, because we haven't had it. And I think we're lucky in Minnesota to have a number of very progressive leaders that sort of deliver that. But at the same time, we're still lacking that in many areas. And I don't think that it matters to people right now who you are, who you might share your home with, or again, what your race or religion or ethnicity, any of that is. I think they're just hungry for somebody who can put forth some sort of bold vision for not just our community, but hopefully our state and our nation. I mean, you talked about the response that our community gets from elected officials, Democrats, specifically in Washington, and a lot, many times it's just silence. And I think that's actually can be said about more than just our community. I think it can be said about the healthcare debate. I think it can be said about how we treat people of low to moderate incomes in this country, how we deal with poverty. We have the time when people threw out the gauntlet, when somebody like JFK said, we can send a man to the moon, the time of us talking big and then acting on those pledges and promises has sort of gone away. And I think that's sad, that the modern state of politics is very sad. And I think the nation is hungry for that kind of vision and that kind of leadership. And I'm just talking about Duluth, Minnesota, but I'm hoping that I think that's what I'm bringing to this race, is a clear vision of our city and where I'd like to see our city in the next 10 years. And I don't think it matters to people, again, necessarily certain aspects of my personal life. It's about how their city's going to look in the next decade, from whether it's just streets and infrastructure, or whether it's job creation, or whether, again, it's a welcoming type of community. We have many issues affecting the GLBT community, just in terms of say domestic partnership benefits. I think because the national government, the federal government, seems to take a backseat to issues like this, I think on the local level we need to sort of send the message back up the chain of command that says we're going to tackle this here. We're going to serve as an example in the city of Duluth, or in our county, or in our state, and be a leader in this particular area. And those are some of the things that I'd like to bring forward that recognize and benefit all groups of people again.
Well, Jeff, that is a very good point that you made regarding my comments about we can count on the Democrats to remain silent, and you expanded that to include, for instance, health care and so many other areas. Very well said. And I had not expanded it to cover those other areas, but it seems to be true. This air of caution. It's almost as if the folks in the House and the Senate, at least in Washington, still think that that they are in the minority. I understand they're in a precarious position with having to meet the voting enough majority to get this or that across, but. But you're very correct in saying that it does apply to more than just the gay community, and I'm wondering here too about, you seem to have such a strong background. You've been it seems to me you've been volunteering for years. It seems to me what I'm getting at, Jeff, in a roundabout way, is your resume is stunning to run for what you're about, for what you're doing. And you've demonstrated concern with the community, with the Second Harvest. And how is employment in your area? I mean, I'm tying this in the sense that homelessness, Second Harvest, shelters, and your sense of being a responsible citizen and volunteering, how is that all going in your area?
Well, I'll say first that when...
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. says Al-Qaeda was behind Iraq's deadliest attack in almost a year. Four near-simultaneous suicide bombings targeted a small Kurdish sect in northern Iraq. At least 200 people were killed, another 200 wounded. 9 U.S. troops were killed yesterday, 5 of them in a transport helicopter crash in western Iraq. In Afghanistan, 3 German security guards have been killed and another wounded. Their convoy was struck by a roadside bomb. In Miami, jurors in the Jose Padilla terrorism trial begin deliberations today. Padilla and his co-defendants are accused of supporting Islamic terrorism overseas. If convicted, they face life in prison. San Francisco, arguments begin today in the federal appeals court trial of a Saudi Arabian charity accused of assisting Al-Qaeda. Lawyers for the charity will argue the government spied on members of the group and their attorneys without a legally required warrant. The Bush administration is considering designating Iran's Revolutionary Guard as a global terrorist group. The move would authorize the Treasury Department to confiscate the Guard's finances and go after those who do business with the 125,000-member group. The Big Island of Hawaii hunkered down last night as Hurricane Flossie barreled past, dumping almost a dozen inches of rain. Winds exceeded 100 miles per hour. The first hurricane of the Atlantic season is fermenting east of the Caribbean Sea. Forecasters predict the storm, Dean, will strike the Lesser Antilles and Puerto Rico by this weekend. In Israel, former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has easily won re-election as leader of the right-wing Likud party. The victory makes Netanyahu the forerunner for prime minister in the 2010 general election. In Washington, Republican Representative Dennis Hastert of Illinois announced he will retire when his term ends next year. Hastert, first elected in 1986, served as House Speaker longer than any other Republican in history. NASA expects to decide today whether repairs are needed on the Space Shuttle Endeavour before